This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hello, everybody. I am Mitch Albom, and this is the Tuesday People Podcast. If you're new to our podcast, this podcast was inspired by the book Tuesdays with Maury and the lessons I learned in putting it together, sitting alongside my old college professor, Maury Schwartz, as he was dying from Lou Gehrig's disease. And every Tuesday, we took a class in what's really important in life once you are sure you're going to die, as he was. And those lessons have reverberated throughout my life, and as it turns out, apparently through many, many people's lives, through the pages of that book. And for the last year and a half, 2 years, we've been doing this podcast, bringing you the actual sounds of the conversations that I had with my old college professor back in 1995, and how they still resonate even to this day, and many of the lessons seen through my eyes as I've gotten older and seen through the eyes of my producer and friend who's with us every week, Lisa Goich. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Mitch.
Today's program in particular, we're going to share a couple of personal things that I think will resonate with all of you having to do with mothers and what happens when you lose your mother. And there are many deaths that people go through in the course of their lives that they have to deal with, but I think there is one unique one when you lose your mother, because obviously you're losing the person who brought you into this world. And what are the ramifications of that? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But we wanted to take a second to acknowledge the enormous amount of response we got from our last podcast, which is kind of closely related to what we're talking about here. And that was childhood trauma and how childhood trauma comes back to shadow you, shall we say. It doesn't always haunt you, but it shadows you in your adult life. And this happened with Maury in many cases, one of which, a huge one, was the death of his mother when he was just 8 years old. But we got a lot of wonderful comments, heartfelt comments from people who contacted us, what, Lisa, through the Facebook site or through the website?
Yeah, through our Facebook group page. Uh-huh. And really, really beautiful comments, you know, and just touching.
One read, "How profound and significant and wise for you to have childhood trauma as a subject for the podcast. It's so incredibly prevalent. I don't believe most people have made the connection, or they say it's the past, it doesn't matter now, and they shove it under the rug. I offer this advice, which I share with some of my clients. If you're making decisions in your present based on your unhealed trauma from your past, your past isn't your past. It's right in your back pocket, coloring your decisions more than you know, from jobs to partners to child rearing and beyond." So true. And yes, so well stated. I wish I had had that sentence when we were doing the podcast, because if it's not healed, it's in your back pocket and you are taking it everywhere you go. So true. Another a gentleman wrote, "Today's podcast was both therapeutic and painful. My dad died when I was 10. He was a disabled vet. After his death, in a moment of anger, my mom yelled at me. She said, 'You never made time for your dad.' Almost 45 years later, those words continue to haunt me. Maybe confronting that today and moving past it will leave it where it belongs, in the past." Yes, please. 45 years is too long to carry that around.
From a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah. And I imagine his mother probably didn't even realize the impact of that statement or what she said. I wrote a book called The Five People You Meet in Heaven a number of years ago. And in it, and at the time I was only in my early 40s. And in it, I remember writing a chapter. I was talking about the lead character. It's a novel, a lead character, and how his parents had treated him. And his father was a very kind of abusive guy, you know, rough and physical. And I wrote that all parents damage their children, and that kids are like pristine glass, and that parents are like the fingerprints that get on the glass. At the very least, you leave a fingerprint. At worst, you drop the glass and it shatters into a million pieces. And it is so true. Our parents have such an effect on us. We never really quite realize how much until many years later when we're no longer in the house and in that relationship. But, you know, everyone has to determine, is it, am I just fingerprinted by my parents? Am I held on tight, you know, in a palm print? Or did they scratch it like the glass? Or did they drop it? And did I break as a result of it? Am I shattered? Exactly. So that, note speaks to that. Another woman wrote, I was 19 when my father died. My aunt once told me that we never loved him when he was still alive and blamed his depression on us. She said we pushed him to his limits. I blame myself for years after. I got diagnosed with depression also and still coping even after almost 6 years after. Life is hard. It is. It is. Thank you for these responses. They're heartfelt and they mean a lot to Lisa and myself because, you know, podcasting is a wonderful medium, but we're yet to crack the code on simultaneously podcasting and talking to the audience and hearing their responses at the same time. Right. We've gotten to the point where we can get the delayed responses and we can get voice messages and things, but it's not live radio. And so you don't get to hear immediately the reaction. So we appreciate it when we do get this reaction from people. Yeah. And, it's
very much.
Deal.
Those are really beautiful comments. So I'm glad we.
Yeah. And you can always do those. Facebook page at WeTuesdayPeople.com on the web. What's our Facebook moniker?
It's the Facebook group page. We have two Facebook pages. We have one that's called Tuesday People Podcast. That's the generic page.
Right.
But the private for members only page is just Tuesday People. Right. So look for that. You'll see Mitch's picture right on the podcast.
Well, that's how don't let that deter you, please. Don't let that scare you away. So today we're going to talk, we're going to take this childhood trauma thing one step forward and talk about something that's very specific. And that is the loss of your mother, a brother, a sister, a friend, a colleague, a husband, a wife, even a child. And I know, sadly, from personal experience with that, is different when you lose those people than when you lose your mother. Because losing your mother, for most people, is losing sort of the grounded sense of security that was always there when you were growing up. Who did you run to when things got bad? Who did you cry to when you were scared? Who did you turn to for comfort or holding? Odds are it was your mother, certainly when you were an infant, and perhaps even when you were a young child or even through your teenage years. So to lose that sense of security changes you, particularly when it happens in your life. Now, in Lisa and my cases, we lost our parents relatively later in our lives. You know, not like Maury, who lost his when he was 8. I was in my 50s when my mother passed away, which is now already 6 years ago. And you were what, Lisa, in your 40s?
I was in my late 40s. I was 49-ish.
Yeah.
Almost 50.
And what do you recall being the impact of losing your mother, both immediate, meaning in the immediate aftermath, in the days, minutes, hours, days after she died, and now 6, 7, 8 years later, when you look back on it, what were the two? What were the major impacts at those two dots on the graph, and how are they different from one another?
Wow, it's so hard because I just was thinking the other day that I don't know if I have fully embraced the fact that she's gone, and it's been, you know, many years. She died in 2011. So, this year it'll be. This November, it'll be 10 years. That's 10 years. Insane to me that much time has passed. At the time when my mom passed away, I had just gone back to Michigan to visit them for what was just going to be a long weekend visit. I wasn't planning on my mom dying. That wasn't even in the cards. Right. And when I got back there, she had just started kidney dialysis. And she decided when I was there, she announced that she was going to stop her dialysis. She had done like 11 treatments, didn't want it anymore. She was in the hospital because she had fallen at one of her appointments and it was a thing. And she just at that point said, I'm done. So it was all kind of immediately, it was a shock to me. It wasn't like she died immediately, but it was an immediate choice that she was making that was like, whoa, 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 you know. But I was blessed to have 2 weeks to work through it. Mm-hmm. So in those 2 weeks, I was blessed to be able to say everything, you know, anything I wanted to tell her. I mean, not a lot of people get those chances. And so I realize what a blessing that is.
Did you use every day of those 2 weeks to do that?
Oh, every second. I never left the house. Never.
Would you say, okay, Mom, today we're talking about the years between 8 and 11.
Yes. Right?
Tomorrow exactly. We're going to talk about pre-adolescence.
Exactly. And all the things. I mean, I wrote a book about it. It was called 14 Days. And, you know, because it was a weird thing to just be say you have 14 days to spend with this person, because they told us it would be 2 weeks. And they were right. It was smack right on exactly 2 weeks. And I mean, and I went to everything, apologizing for things. When I smashed the car once, we talked about that. We talked about everything. And I mean, it was to the point where I wasn't leaving her side and I wasn't leaving the house. I mean, it was winter. She died on Christmas Eve. So it was cold outside. So it wasn't like I could go anywhere anyway. But at one point she said to me, are you going to get out of your pajamas? Like, you have to change your clothes. You have to take a shower. And I'm like, why? I'm not seeing anybody. I'm just here with you. But I didn't want her to leave my sight, you know?
Right.
And how do you
view those 2 weeks? Were they cherish? Were they sad? Were they tragic? Were you, you know, I mean, your 2 weeks are a little bit like a microcosm of my, you know, month with Maury. And yeah. I've had people ask me, well, was it a sad experience? You're going to visit somebody who's dying. And I have to say, of course, the dying part was sad. You know, every week you got closer to him being gone. But there was so much joyousness also in the process of the conversations and the things we were saying. And there was a sense of significance. You know, we have so much of our life is spent in just trivial matters. And now you're having the conversations of conversations. These are the ones that truly matter, that it was like really being alive. It was really your senses were peaked. You listened to everything. You took things seriously. There was no room for boredom. There was no room for distraction. Mm-mm. And I imagine during those 14 days, that it was the same way for you.
Yeah, it was the same way. But it's weird the things that would seep in that I felt really guilty for, like worrying about not being at work I had just started a new job. So I was, and then my mom wasn't helping by saying, are they going to be mad that you're here? You know, you should go home. And I'm like, well, I can't go home because what if I go home and then she dies? Then I'll live with that for the rest of my life.
Right.
So, you know, those sort of things, like now I look back on that and it pains me that I ever even let that go into my brain. Mm. But those are the things that we think about, because we think about life while we're in the middle of death, you know, because life goes on. But I, you know, for the most part, you know, we laughed a lot, you know, she had lots of friends come over. I mean, it was really like a big party for two weeks. You came over, Mitch.
I remember
you
being
and
there.
Rosie.
A lot of laughs.
Came over.
Yeah.
And she loved that. We had a friend of mine was married. He has since passed away to a Native American chief. And he came over and gave my mom this blessing and made her a princess in her final days.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he gave her
last
this
minute promotion.
Eagle. Yeah, she got a last minute promotion. She was my mom was like blown away. He gave her this eagle feather.
What was the last thing like? The last conversation? Did you know it was the last conversation? Did you get a goodbye?
I did not know it was the last conversation. And I think I even talked about that in the book. I wish I remembered that the last thing she said to me was going to be the last thing she said to me.
Right.
And I don't remember what the last thing she said to me was. I talked to her a lot on her way out.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all sitting with her. She died at 2 o'clock in the morning. We were all around her the whole time. You know, the entire time I was playing music for her because it was Christmas Eve. So I was playing from my phone, like her favorite songs. And she wasn't responsive at all, but she did squeeze my hand at one point because the hospice nurse told us that the last thing to go is hearing, and that even when people can't respond, they can still hear you. And so she encouraged us to keep talking. So though my mom wasn't talking, I felt like she was talking nonverbally. You know, it's a strange place to be in, but I wish I would have remembered the last thing she said.
Yeah.
You know, she was uncomfortable at the end. And so the last day, even when she was still talking, wasn't her.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think a lot of people go through that where the final days, final moments, we'd all like to think like the last thing we say is, you know, love wins, love always wins,
yeah,
you know, something brilliant that Maury said. But even Maury's last words, I'm sure, weren't like that. His last words to me were, I said to him, you know, I'll see you next Tuesday. And I think I made a joke like, I expect you to be in better shape, because he was really down. And he laughed. And that was the last thing with me. But he lived another two days. It might have been with someone else. But I want for our audience's purposes, I don't want to drift too much into our personal stories. We all have them. But I want for our audience purposes, the universality of losing your mother. Losing your mother. And for me...
Yeah, what was that like for you?
Well, I divide the world into two eras, when my mother was in it with me and now that she isn't. My father lived longer than she did, but once my mother was gone, it was a new form of adulthood for me. It was you are the grown-up, and there's no more child, there's no more safety net. And the biggest thing for me was not being able to call my mother. My mother lost the ability to talk before she died because she suffered strokes, and the strokes robbed her of her ability to talk. So in the last year plus of her life, it was just grunting and groaning, which was so heartbreaking because my mother was so communicative and so verbal. All my writing skills or communication skills, everything I get from her. My dad was more the silent, you know, strong silent type. And, for me, it was like, okay, there's no calling anymore, and I can't pick up the phone and make that phone call and just bounce things off of her. And I felt adrift. And I think that everybody goes through that when they lose their mother. It doesn't always happen the first day, doesn't happen the first month, it doesn't always happen the first year. But there's a point at which, if you had a good relationship with your mother, now obviously if you had a warring relationship with your mother, you hated each other, you were out of each other's lives for years, then when your mother dies, I think, you know, I still think there's feelings, guilt, maybe I was wrong, those kinds of things. But maybe you're not going to miss that presence. But for the overwhelming majority of people who have their mothers in their lives in some shape or form, even if it's like, oh, mom's calling again, oh God, you know, that kind of thing, even if it's that, when they're not there, that security, that backdrop, it's like a play where they take away the stage.
You're still
there, and you're still saying your lines, but the backdrop is gone, and you can't rely on any of the props, and there's nothing, it's just you. And the things that you say, you know what I mean? And I think that's the first thing I would note about losing your mom is that the world draws a line on the sand that says everything that happened up till this point was when the person who brought you into the world was still with you in it. Everything that happens afterwards, you are responsible for.
Yeah. Did you feel this way? This is one of the biggest things I noticed was that I didn't realize how much I depended on my mom still as an adult until after she was gone. Did you feel that way, Mitch?
Yeah, but not depended maybe in the way that people usually associate that word, like, mom, what do I do? Or mom, help me. Or mom, I need you to do this for me. I need you to call somebody for me. I think I had, by that age, I was quite independent. And my mom was sick in the final year, so she wasn't doing things for me or for anyone. We were doing for her. But I still say the answer is yes to your question, because you depend on your mother for other things. You depend on your mother, for example, for validation. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's good. How many of us want to hear our mother say, that's good, you did good, that's a good thing you're doing? Even if you're not asking for help, just to have to please your mother, the desire to make your parents happy, but particularly to make your mother happy, is a need. It's not just a thing, it's a need. It's something, it's very human to want our mothers to be able to bless the things that we're doing. And to we feel like we're on the right track if our parents kind of confirm that, yeah, good move. And, you know, when my mom could still talk, I had a mother that was, and we all think our mothers are, you know, the most unique and the most special, and everybody should feel that way about their own mother. But beyond being great and being funny and being personable and all those things, I think a characteristic that my mother had sometimes that others don't is that she was fiercely, fiercely on my side. And when I say fiercely on my side, like if I was wrong, she was still on my side.
Right.
You know, sometimes I would say to her, no, Mom, I was wrong. No, you weren't.
Somebody, right.
No, I was.
I love that.
No, you weren't. You weren't wrong. They were wrong. And
that's
a
mom.
Yeah, I think knowing that somebody that is unconditionally going to take your side.
Yes.
I think you miss that too. Because almost everybody else in the world, your father may be the same way too, and grandparents, of course, but everybody else, your brother, your sister, your friends, they're not 100% going to always, you know, they may say, on this one, Mitch, on this one, Lisa, you know, I got to say, I could kind of see the other guy's point of view. Not my mom.
No.
No. She would, even when I was wrong, I was right in her mind. And I think that kind of like, wow, even if you laugh at it, to have somebody to do that for you, you really miss when it's gone.
Yeah. That validation. I had the same exact thing with my mom. If my husband and I would get into a fight or something and I would call her about it, she would start swearing up a storm about him. He shouldn't do, you know, even if it was my fault, she just always took my side no matter what. I do miss that. And just for them to listen, like, I don't think there's ever been anybody around to listen like my mother. And one thing I feel guilty about now that she's no longer here is that I didn't listen to her enough. Yeah. I should have asked her more questions.
Right.
And I don't know if other people have that universally where we depend on them so much.
I think that that's a really good point, Lisa. I think that that's a very universal thing when people lose their mothers. After some time passes, there is so much information that they would like to get from their mothers that they never bothered to ask. It goes from the simple things like the family history, which many people don't get when their mother passes away, and then that's the last connection they had to it, to, you know, just, I wonder how my mom felt about this. Gee, I never asked her about her life. I never asked her about when she got married. One thing I can suggest to you folks, if you are blessed enough to have your mother, your father, or both still in the world, but they're getting elderly, sit down with them. You've got all the technology now in the world. Sit down with them and record the family history. I had the insight to do this one fall day when I happened to be home and we had nothing to do for the whole afternoon. It was bad weather outside. And I had a little video camera and I set it up. I said, for once and for all, I'm going to hear this whole story of our family. And my father and my mother tried to tell it to me. And of course, it became very funny because they disagreed over half of it. No, you have that wrong. That wasn't him. It was the other one. His name wasn't Paul. It was Saul. It was you know, I have all that captured. But I cannot tell you how many times I go and look at that and watch that and listen to my mother tell me the story of our family from as far back as she knew. And it's the stories that I will now tell, you know, the younger members of our family and all the people who come later. But so there's I think that's very universal that we want to ask our mothers questions that we can no longer ask.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo, bros.
Good job.
So let's review to this point. We're talking about not having security. We're talking about not having validation. We're talking about not having someone who always has your side and is always 100% behind you. We're talking about not being able to ask questions, be it for information or just for wondering about the person who your mother was. But I want to play you something that Maury said. Now, Maury lost his mother when he was 8. And if you lose your mother too soon, too young, there are ramifications to that that are different than if you lose them just sort of in the normal progression of life, you know, by the time they reach their 80s or things like that. Listen to what happened to Maury.
And the major discovery, I would say, is the way in which it was hard for me to trust the world and to trust my commitments to be powerful and continuing because of the loss of my mother at an early age. Because the fear was, any moment, if I committed to something, it would be snatched away. So therefore, I partially commit, or half commit, or commit, but always have a little bit of a reservation. I don't feel that now, but this is what I did feel. And that was an important discovery. Me.
So this I can tell you from not my personal experience, but all the orphans that I work with at our orphanage in Haiti at the Have Faith Haiti mission. So many of them don't have their mothers or their mothers died. That was the reason that they came to us. And there is in almost all of them an impermanence, a distrust, it comes out in the form of like constant reassurance. They need constant reassurance that you're going to come back, that you're not going to leave them, that you're not going to, not return or not keep your word or not do something that you said you were going to do. And it's because the most important security that they had was yanked away from them. And as Maury said, it haunted him into his adult life where he couldn't make commitments. He took a long time to get married, for example, because there was, and he didn't even understand why until a therapist analyzed that when you lose your mother young, you fear that any other important commitment that you make where you give your heart, because let's face it, you give your heart to your mother lock, stock, and barrel. There's no, I'm going to keep a little piece just in case you don't turn out to be a really good mom and I can go get another one. It's not like that. It's not a boyfriend-girlfriend situation. You give everything you have to your mother. And so when she's taken prematurely, you wonder, should I ever give anything like that again to anyone because I don't want to feel that pain again? I don't want to go through that pain again. And so the loss of your mother when you're younger is the pain of it can shadow so much of the decisions that you make. And if there's anyone out there who did lose their mother young, I'm curious to hear from you about how that informed you even years later, even when it had been 5, 10, 15, 20 years, in terms of making decisions about commitments or trusting love in another form. Because losing your mother's love too soon will make you wary of all other love that you allow in or are afraid to allow in.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that pain, you know, because I know I was very clingy to my mom until she died. Yeah. You know, I mean, I see pictures of me with my mom. I was a baby by 10 years. And so my sister was 10 years older. Everybody was out of the house. So I was pretty much an only child. But every picture of us throughout my life, I'm either on my mom's lap, holding on to her, standing behind her, hugging her. And that's pretty much how I traveled through life. Nothing different than I was still that 2-year-old baby clinging to my mom. Hmm. So I can imagine when you lose that young,
it's a void that probably is never made up. Now, conversely, again, I'm kind of jumping around here, but these things are occurring to me as we're talking. There's another loss that you go through, that you continue to go through as an adult after you lose your mother. And that is, remember I said the world is drawn, you know, there's a line drawn in the world and there's before mom's death and after mom's death. Mm-hmm. And you live on the other side forever now. Well, one of the things about living on that other side is that all your milestones become happy milestones, always have a tinge of sadness. Mm. You have a baby, you have a grandchild. If my mom was still here. Every happy occasion, every success, every moment that you want to brag a little bit or you get patted on the back or you're just proud of your child's school play, proud of your child's graduation. I have seen so many people who burst into tears at the happiest of occasions because they say, I wish my mother was here to see this. It's such a universal human desire. And I think it goes back to, you know, when we were kids and we did a finger painting and we said, mommy, look, you know, mommy, look, notice what I did. And what would mommy always say? Oh, very nice. Oh, that's good.
It's
beautiful. Yeah, so beautiful. And you felt like, yes, I am Picasso.
It's the most beautiful drawing I've ever seen.
And you go right back to the next one. Well, we still have that in us. We still have that in us. And when it might be for us or it might be for our children, but we know that it made our parents happy, it made our mothers happy to have those moments to share with us. And when they're not there, we miss that, oh, very nice. Oh, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so happy. And particularly with children, our children and our grandchildren, I think we miss the connectivity to the previous generation to, you know, keep the links in the chain all together. The chain is a little shorter when your mother is no longer there and you miss that extra link in the chain. And that is also something that comes when the line in the sand is drawn and you're living on now the other side, world without mom.
Right. And it's hard to explain that. Like I don't have children, but I have nieces and great nieces. And when I see my niece, who was very close to my mom, try to explain it to her daughter, who her grandmother was. I made a book for her because they share a name. Mm-hmm. And I can see, but you know, the baby niece can sort of get it, but they don't know. And you try to share this person's life so that they'll think of them as fondly as you did, but that can't possibly happen because they weren't touched by them in that way. You know, and I think that's the hardest part is you don't want the memory of them to fade. So you're the one who has to keep it alive yourself. And, you know, it's just never the same.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why? And you can see all the terrain around you? You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So one thing I want to make sure that we get across before we finish here is that while we're talking about all of these reactions to losing your mother, there are also ramifications. Missing and being sad and being nostalgic, these are burdens, but these are not risks. Mm-hmm. But there are risks. Depression is a risk. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is a risk. A post-traumatic stress type of reaction to something, especially if your mother was sick for a period of time. This is in particular a sensitive topic for people because we all know and feel how our mothers took care of us when we were infants, when we were sick, when we remember their nurturing nature when we were sick and had to take us to the doctor and sit with us and give us chicken soup and put their hands on our forehead to check our temperature. You know, as much as you used to want your mom to say there's no temperature, you still always love the fact that she put her hand on your forehead just to see if there
I love that.
Know?
Yeah.
And they were
magic because they could, they knew the numbers just by their hand on your head.
Yeah.
Oh, that feels like 102 to me.
Well, now we're tasked with taking care of them. And especially if it's for years, you start to wonder, am I doing a good job? And then if they pass away, you say, did I mess up? Did I not, you know, I lost my patience a few times. You know, my mom was driving me crazy and she wanted this and I yelled at her. And that can lead to a lot of post-traumatic stress that you can't, you know, you might need some therapy or somebody to talk to get rid of that because, you know, the only way in your mind to get rid of it is to have another conversation with your mother and apologize. But if you can't do that, you're sort of left with that thing hanging. Low self-esteem. Even sexual risk behaviors and things like that have been known to come out of losing parents. And so please, beyond the nostalgia and the sadness and, you know, the way we all have to grow up, if any of those things you find are ramifications of losing your mom, particularly recently, please recognize that you're not alone. And these are common symptoms and, you know, seek out help for them. Because people will know what to tell you. The one thing about losing a mother is that you're not alone. Most people will go through that in the course of their lives unless they themselves die very young. And we're going to have to, you know, all learn how to deal with it and all learn how to walk around with the pain that is, you know, being motherless. You know the song, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child.
Motherless child, right.
Yeah, there's a reason that song is so sad and so poignant. And not that a fatherless child is not just as significant and there aren't just as many ramifications. But as I say, the woman that brought you into the world no longer being there affects your sense of where you are in the world. And I remember sort of distinctly feeling like, not only am I an adult now for real, but I'm sort of next, you know, especially felt that way when my dad passed and I had no parents left. And then it's like, okay, I'm really next in line. My health started to become a really big issue for me. You know, I somehow, I don't know, when my mom was still alive, I didn't think that much about my health. I thought I'm going to be fine, you know? And when she was gone and my dad was gone, suddenly every health thing really scared me because I realized like I'm the next person up. I got to watch out for my mortality.
Yeah.
And you don't tend to think about that when your parents are alive.
No, not when you're that, you know, no. I do that too now. When I look, I have a picture next to my bed of my mom, her brother, her mom, her dad. And I always look at it and think all of them are gone.
Yeah.
Like, we're next. You know, me, my right. sister, my brother, right. you know, our generation. It's really hard. And there's not a day, I think, that we still in these times go, I want my mommy is yeah. is a very, we that's from the time yeah. we're born until the time you die.
Yeah.
I often say, I want my mommy, you know. It's yeah. Universal.
I wrote a book called The First Phone Call from Heaven, and in it, people start getting these phone calls from heaven. And, you know, some are husbands or wives or kids or friends or whatever. But the one that the people always, readers always talk to me about is the one who gets a call from her mother, and mm-hmm. how, what they talk about and how yeah. they get this other chance. And how many, I can't tell you how many times I have sort of instinctively reached for the phone, which is right here as I'm talking to you, and you know, have to drop my hand and say, you know, it's not mm-hmm. there. I mean, how many times I used to just dial that number by heart. I knew it backwards and forwards. Yeah. And I'd hear, you know, and when my mother got call waiting, or call, not, right. call not call waiting, caller ID, that was uh-huh. her favorite thing, because then she could say, hello, hello, right. you know, like she knew it was me, you know, and, uh-huh. You know, just that greeting, what I wouldn't give for, you know, one more of those, what all of us probably wouldn't give.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a universal thing. So there's a lot to this topic, and maybe it's something we'll come back and revisit, but I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on how it has affected you, because I think we've just scratched the surface, and we laid out about 8 or 9 different ways, and there's probably 80 or 90.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd like to hear from people and see. But just recognize that if you were lucky enough to have your mom for a lot of years, that's a blessing, and that's something mm-hmm. to count as, you know, I had my mom in my life all that time. And that if you are going through some things to deal with it, don't be ashamed. The loss of your mother is going to have ramifications, hopefully not serious ones, but there's, if you feel nothing, if it's like, well, you know, I was sad and took a couple of days and she was gone, I would worry more about you then if yeah. there aren't some more serious, longer term ramifications. And in this most yeah. serious cases, you know, please try to seek help for them, but know that you're not alone. There's one thing we can all say about one another. We all had a mother. We
yes,
all had a mother.
That's true.
Yeah, we all had a mother who was, at least for a second, present while we were born.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah, everybody, yes.
All right. We've enjoyed visiting with you for this week. You can check us out at WeTuesdayPeople.com on the web and on the Facebook page, at Tuesday People Podcast. And we look forward to our future conversations with you. Until then, on behalf of Lisa Goich, I am Mitch Albom saying, see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Tuesday People. To be part of our conversation, join the Tuesday People community at WeTuesdayPeople.com. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode, and share it with your friends. We look forward to having you with us every Tuesday because, after all, we're Tuesday People.